welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, let me give you the reminder. The board needs us out here. So the reminder is the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent, and usually don't, the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. And our topic today is customer satisfaction and how it can impact your business, social media, and how it impacts us. And I have with me in the studio Nancy McCurry of Broadreach Marketing Services. Broadreach helps develop practical, effective marketing solutions that ensure local businesses attract, engage, and retain customers. She works with both large and small organizations, developing successful market strategies, directing groundbreaking market research, and distilling compelling messages for the interactive campaigns. Additionally, Nancy has founded and grown her own successful small business, which gives her an in-depth understanding of the critical challenges small business owners are facing. Her credentials include an MBA in marketing, certifications from NC State, HubSpot, and Pragmatic Marketing. And Nancy, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
And we've been trying to do this for a couple of months between your schedule and my schedule. We've just not gotten it in, but now you're here in the studio. And let's tell our audience about marketing and how customer satisfaction is classified as marketing, and then how do we play with that to make sure that we bring those customers in, keep them, and keep them happy?
Well, customers are the main part of your business. So if we think about customer satisfaction, you really shouldn't think of it as separate from marketing. It should be core to your business. Understanding your customers and making sure that you're filling their needs is probably the main part of marketing. I mean, marketing just started with just the fact of finding needs and filling them in a way that is best for everyone is the best definition of marketing that I've seen in a long time. But anyway, back to customer satisfaction. There's a lot of ways that you can find out if your customers are satisfied.
And what do we mean by satisfied?
The fact is, actually, they should be satisfied and delighted, actually. The thing is that, you know, when a customer comes in and uses your survey, or your service, say if you have a store, they come in, and sometimes it's kind of hard to see if you've given them exactly what they need. And there's different ways to find out. Somebody could come into your, not everybody's going to tell you exactly what they think. When
right.
they meet, people are pretty much, they're a little bit risk averse. They don't really like to confront people. I mean, there's a small segment of the population that does like to and will speak
up. Vocal, right.
Yes, and I think it's less than 10%.
But everybody else will leave and be vocal
right.
everywhere else.
And the thing is, they won't tell you to your face, but they're a lot more a lot more vocal online. I think it's 43% of people will say something bad about a business online, yet they don't tell the owner. So you want to be proactive and get to those people before they go and tell their friends, family, and everyone they know on Facebook how bad your business is.
Well, and we're talking about the entire experience. It's just not whether it's the right product, is it the right price, was I greeted when I came in, did somebody follow me around the store versus somebody saying, can I help you?
It could be a lot of different things.
It's a lot of dynamics in that.
It's not. And you could be doing really well on a lot of factors, and maybe there's just one thing. Maybe your store smells, and everything else is great. You have a great product, great prices, and everything else, but those people just hate coming in. I mean, that's why grocery stores, you know, sometimes you have those piped-in cinnamon
right.
smells. Well, it's just something that they think they can do. That's extra, and they may have found that out in a survey. And there's different ways that you can find out what your customers are doing. The very easiest, if you are a business where the business owner interacts with customers themselves, they can ask and they
right.
can observe. Like if you hit a store and you notice that certain people will like have disgusted expressions when they're looking at a certain display, well, you know, that's probably one that you want to change. Or you might notice that there's certain bottlenecks where people have to wait. You can do certain observations. Even with a larger enterprise, you can do observations and walking, kind of like management by walking around, but you're looking at your customers.
Well, I know, I won't say which office supply store I was in one day, and sometimes those expectations, we have to manage those expectations, because when we're doing a self-service area, so you're
mm-hmm.
going to go make your own copies, and you're going to use their equipment, but you're supposed to go help yourself. And so if someone, you know, everybody else is standing in line for custom service. Mm-hmm. They want something designed or something, and there's a long line there. And that one person was supposed to do self-service really doesn't want self-service. Mm-hmm. He wants somebody coming over and holding their hand. I mean, I was in one of the office supply stores, and the guy lost it because he wasn't getting service, but he was in the self-service area. And she was trying to kindly explain, when I finish with this one customer, I will come and help you with that. But he didn't want to wait. But that expectation was, mm-hmm. okay, he's going to go out. He was pretty vocal there, but I'm sure he's going to come out even more vocal somewhere else.
Probably.
And so when we were looking at it, you know, I came home and I wrote an article, because it's like, how do you deal with that one very vocal, and I'm going to say unrealistic customer on the service end, versus having 10 people in line that knew they were in line for custom service and were waiting patiently for theirs. But this one guy has some unreal expectation. But that's part of what we have to do as businesses, small businesses right. especially. How do we manage that? How do we make our processes, our customer satisfaction, equipped so that we're communicating well mm-hmm. inside to the people waiting, to somebody that's calling in, and we're trying to help someone that's in the store? How do we manage all those things? And then how do we filter that feedback that we're getting and see whether it is a realistic expectation or it's just something we're going to ignore?
Well, that's very tough. But the one thing is to look at people who are complaining as an opportunity and really try to understand their point of view, because you can learn a lot. In fact, in all types of businesses, if they do win-loss analysis and mm-hmm. actually talk to lost customers, you can learn a lot about what you're doing wrong in your business, that maybe it's just something very small that you can fix, but they're a little bit more, they're more apt to tell you. And talking to, say, that gentleman who's in line, you can maybe figure out why he missed the point that he was supposed to be doing it himself versus going.
The big sign over his head that was saying self-service.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's certain times where businesses just have to apologize and let it lay, because there are certain, you know, some, you know, there's that curve of right. population. There's always somebody on the edges there. But you can find something out interesting. Looking at businesses online is important, too. You can use the same technique of observations when you're looking at a website. You can see, like, if there's certain pages where people come into your website and they're exiting. If they exit on certain pages more than others, you can say, well, look at that page and see what you're doing right. on that page that's turning them off, where they're getting what they needed, or maybe they're not getting what they need and they get frustrated and they leave. So you can use the analytics on websites just like you can in observation in someone's, like, say, a retail setting.
And so many yeah. of our businesses are a mix of yeah. live and online.
Absolutely.
And trying to satisfy that dimension, and we have such a broad range of who our customers and ages might be. Mm-hmm. In my business, I have millennials, I have Generation Y, I have baby boomers. You have people from other countries coming in that have different expectations. You have people that are from different parts of the country here with different expectations. And so those dynamics of mm-hmm. trying to find a sweet spot that serves them all well and gets them the value, the timely service, and things like that, how do we, again, manage our customer base? Is it manage those expectations and those interactions when a baby boomer, and I have one client in particular in mind, she'll pay more for her legal services just because they have mahogany furniture and they have all this stuff, and it's just her expectation right. of when she walks in there. Mm-hmm. And she paid $5,000 to be incorporated, where if she went to a millennial firm, it may have been $1,000. But for her, that trade-off was in
made
how
sense.
She was treated.
Right.
It made sense, even though she blew more than half of her budget.
But she may not be typical, of course.
Right, it's not typical. Yeah. But there are those dynamics of how, when we're advising clients, right. you and I both advising small businesses, that those dynamics and understanding those trade-offs, it's not right or wrong.
Right. And you have to remember, you can't really please everybody. If you try to please everybody, you may not please anyone. So you want to think about who your ideal customers are. And you want to have customers that are also profitable. I mean,
right.
they go hand in hand. I have an MBA, so I always look at things as well as a kind of a
we hope
a business
they go hand in hand.
Yes, yeah. Because you can actually market yourself out of business
yes.
if you're marketing to people who are not profitable, where you're spending more time in service, perhaps, than you are in what you're getting as far as your margins. But anyway, so that's one of the things. You want to figure out your personas. They call them personas. And you can figure out your target ideal customers. And there may be several different kinds. And try to see where the intersection is from all of them. So you have to make sure that you're satisfying at least your core customers. And there may be fringe people that maybe don't like your furniture. Right. But you know, you can't worry about those. You know, it's like you have to figure out what the value that you're delivering to your customers.
And so the
is.
Beginning of customer satisfaction is actually serving yeah. the customer you can serve best.
Right, exactly. You want to have a core ideal customer. There may be people around the fringes, but you knowing your customer is very important. And that's actually why a lot of people do surveys. That was one of the things that one of my presentations that people say, oh, I've been surveyed to death. And well, one of the reasons they do that is they're really trying to find out how well they did. The trouble with some of those surveys is they can be very short and not really ask you anything. And the other thing is sometimes they don't give you any spot to actually express an opinion that might not be any of the multiple choice questions. So they're not getting the information. They're just frustrating you. How you do the survey is as important as doing it.
Or not after you do the survey and it's your loyal customers mm-hmm. they're taking the time to do that. Not acknowledging the survey in some way.
Yeah.
Not acknowledging their feedback. Because when they go back and they have the same problem every time they come into your grocery store, it stinks or the people are rude or the stuff's not stocked, whatever it is. If they don't see an improvement, that just tells you as a customer, you feel like you're not valued and you took
right.
that time
yeah.
and you're giving the feedback. So it doesn't matter if that's that one little thing. We all know we all have an alternative for our customers to go to.
Oh, yeah.
It may not be as good as us, well, we
yeah.
think, right?
Yeah, well, we don't think so. But
it's,
yeah.
like in our area, there's 52 grocery stores in like a 10-mile radius, right?
Yeah.
And so as a grocery store, that one little thing may send them somewhere else, but they have to pay a higher price, but they feel valued.
Right. The very best thing you can do is make sure that if you make a change, that first of all, that you acknowledge the idea. And the second of all is if you make the change, give credit to the customer. Now, it's kind of hard if it's a survey where
right.
there's no name attached or anything like that. But sometimes there are because people want to get a reward because a lot of these surveys, people do them only because they're going to be entered
there's
to a contest.
Incentive, yeah.
They're hoping they win that $100 or whatever at the end of the month. But actually, I did a project with one of my clients where we did a survey of his patients and asked them all sorts of things, not only just about his practice, but what they were interested. And then we made sure that whatever we did, any ideas that we picked up from them, we made sure we credited in the
right.
newsletter and also personally because, you know, we had to keep confidentiality. But, you know, he could tell the customers or his patients
yeah.
and say, well, this was your idea. Look at the change or whatever. But we also noted the change and say it's because of your input and just in general.
Right.
So that people who had done the survey felt good about it. They felt like it had accomplished something. I mean, a lot of people really do want to have a voice and they want to feel like they're doing something. So that can help a lot. So that's another benefit. Not only do you learn about your customers and learn what you're doing right and wrong and some of their interests, but they also can feel really good about it if you do it right.
So if I'm a small business and I've had a core customer
yeah.
group for years and then I'm deciding, well, you know, the market is changing, there's
mm-hmm.
different things, or maybe I just want to take my business in a different direction. What's that process? How do I serve yeah. maybe the existing customers or potential customers to find out where
mm-hmm.
that new sweet spot's going to be?
Oh, actually, there's a couple different ways to do it. You probably wouldn't want to start with a survey. There's different ways you can do market research and customer satisfaction research. And some of the best is, especially when in a B2B environment where
mm-hmm.
you have a small number of customers, is talking to each customer individually. I did this very effectively some years back with a cleaning supply company, and I was talking, and they wanted to do some rebranding. But before we started to rebrand, we thought, well, let's really figure out what your challenges are, and what your customers think of you. Well, it turned out that the customers loved him. They were not giving him referrals because his name was very long and generic, and they were always getting it wrong, and people
right.
would go look it up, and they couldn't find him. And so through these series of interviews, we got some suggestions for names. I mean, they even had things they called them already. And I was
right.
like, well, why not name them what your customers are always calling you? So we got some great examples of names and did that, tied into new branding all the way through, the logo, new website, and all that. And he's been very happy with it. He's 5 years down the road, and he's still satisfied with his changes.
And that's great, because I can contrast that with a another client decided, well, they'd had the same name for years. They went by the monogram of the show. And after 30 years, they decided, well, they were going to bring in someone. They were going to change the name and stuff. Oh. But the name they changed it to was something, it was a completely made-up word. Right? And I'm like, okay, but what does this say? Because when I look at it, it doesn't tell me anymore. And then they created a tagline. And I said, well, to me, that sounds like you're a financial services firm. And they weren't. And they're like, oh, no, they did this. And I'm like, okay, but your name now doesn't tell me anything. It's not the one that people have had associated with you for 30 years. And it doesn't clarify who you are.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and they're like, well, you know, this is, and just, it's kind of painful to watch when it's not connected. Like you're talking about, yeah. You connected it to the feedback of the customers.
Right.
That's you the very. To the, already the image that everyone had. Mm-hmm. But so many times I see so many of the companies and I look out there and you see a name and it's like, you know, you want to Google the name to figure out what that word or what language that came from. And you realize that didn't come from any language, right? Well, and there's no root to it. And unless you've got a huge checkbook to create a Coca-Cola brand or a McDonald's brand on that made up word that no one really connects to your company, that can be a very dangerous thing for your business to do.
Oh, definitely. And there's a temptation to do that because people want a unique URL. So they'll go backwards and not even think about it. Let's go, okay, here's a name. Let's think of this. But naming process, I love doing naming processes. But things you have to do is think about is testing it. Testing it with if you have customers already or testing it with potential customers or people who are like your ideal customer and trying to get some input back. It's too easy just to throw out a name because you think it's good and not think about you always have to think about what the customer is thinking, not necessarily what you're thinking.
Well, and the other thing is coming in with your businesses and we'll start pulling in the social media aspect because this example, I'm on LinkedIn and I've been there since the company started in 2002. The company's name is Focus Resources, so it's on there and I've written like 800 articles. I mean, I've been around forever. I literally get a phone call from somebody else on LinkedIn getting upset because when they were doing their social media for her firm out in Colorado, California, somewhere, she'd named a company Focus Resources. I said, well, that's fine. She goes, well, every time somebody types that in, your stuff comes up. You can't do that. And I'm like, okay. Well, I'm trying to explain to her. It's like, okay, my company predated yours. I have this massive social media that I've been doing for 15 years.
Your search optimization is much higher.
And the content is all out there, and LinkedIn's going to be the same way. She's, well, your picture comes up on LinkedIn every time they type in. And I was like, okay, because Focus Resources in and of itself is kind of a generic term. Mine is service marked because of a number of steps I went through. I said, your firm name and mine is the same, but the search engine has already been optimized for 15 years of content.
Right.
You need to change something. Oh, shoot. I mean, I have never, but there was no way to get her to understand. No, Focus Resources, my company.
She should have done a search before she named her company.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that is challenging. And then to not understand that, okay, you can turn on Focus Resources as the name. That's fine.
Right, because it's registered in that state.
In that state. However, when it's got a service mark throughout the United States, there's only certain things you can, you know, use in certain categories that aren't my categories. But also, if Focus Resources has already been optimized for mine or another company in Louisiana, because it was kind of funny, when I started my business, there was a Focus Resources in Louisiana, and we would get each other's email, and we would just send it, and there was no big deal. They were doing something completely different from what I was doing. They say, oh, I got your email, and we just switch. But when you don't realize how crowded the market is. There's lots of Focus Resources in the country. However, what is it have you done to build the content and the brand of that? Because it took me like 3 years to get them to issue the service mark. I said, yes, I had a unique brand because of the content I developed around it. And so I think that's also something that businesses don't understand in the social media environment. You just can't go out and expect to say, well, this is the name I've picked. And if there's 50 other companies that already have it,
yeah, you should kind of do a search first before. And this happens, actually, with big companies and small.
Right.
They don't always do a search and make sure that the name is clear, the URL is available, and everything else. So you wind up having these companies with these odd little things tacked on after them on their URL and things like that. You know, when we were naming Broadreach, Broadreach Marketing Services, we wanted the term Broadreach because it's a sailing term. And when your boat is on a Broadreach, you've got all the wind in your sails, you're making very efficient use of the wind, and you're going towards your goal. And that's how we wanted the analogy right. for how we wanted to work with our customers. But then there was another Broadreach Marketing, so we made sure we always put the services on the URL, and then when we registered and everything right. else, so that we wouldn't be confused. So it's pretty nice that there was only two that we could find on there, as like a, because it's a great name.
Well, and like Focus, mm-hmm. it came about named that because of the acronym. I was sitting down writing down, literally writing down the list of, okay, what areas am I working in? And I thought that's kind of funny. The first letter of all five of those words is spelled Focus. Like, okay, Focus Resources. And again, I went to the Secretary of State's office. I couldn't have an S on resources for the legal name, so mm-hmm. you know, and those kind of things. But I already had the domain name, and that was, again, 15, mm-hmm. almost 16 years ago now. But it was that process. What was going to happen? Who was out there doing that? Was I going to be going head-to-head anywhere in the state with somebody doing the same thing? And it was just those kind of dynamics. And knowing I was going to operate throughout the country, I had to check who held that name. And somebody would say, well, it's Focus Real Estate Party. No, you know, and you would just go through these different things, and gradually you build enough brand mm-hmm. around your logo, around your name, the color schemes, your website, the content, that you differentiate.
Right, yes, and you have to use it. Yeah, I've worked with trademarks, and there's certain things you have to think of ahead of time if you want to trademark a name. You want to make sure it's not too generic. And that's probably why some people go with these real esoteric type names and think that their tagline will help sell them. And that's one way to go. But you got to really think of what customers you're going to be targeting, and if you can do enough education that they can remember it. You know, there's different ways to go about it. But back to the customer satisfaction on social media. Actually, social media is a great place to be, because you can actually put searches out and do monitoring. There's different tools you can use. You can use something really as simple as like a Google alert. And if somebody's saying something about your company, and you should also probably stick in your competitors as well, so you can see if they're saying something about you. And then you can see if someone's talking about you that's not talking to you, but just about you.
Right.
So you can kind of pick up some of those nuances of things that people might say.
Well, and then what is your company known for Focus Resources is known for pretty blunt advice.
Is that your tagline?
No.
Blunt advice, if you want it or not.
That's just kind of the, you know, as your reputation is. But that's also something to think about, is the authenticity of the people who comprise the people delivering the services or making the product.
All right.
You don't always realize how your brand is going to evolve, because it's not about it's about how the customers take in that information, or how the general, your competitors or things. And I was speaking a couple weeks ago, and it was kind of funny, and I'm sure he didn't mean it as harsh as it sounded, but he goes, yeah, you might not like our advice, but it's usually right, and so you got to respect it.
That's a great testimonial.
But it was kind of funny to be in a room of like 40 people, and he said that, and everybody went, what? And so it was kind of an interesting dynamic, because his point was that you're going to get the right advice, whether it's the most comfortable advice or
right.
And so you might not always be comfortable with it, but that's what your business needs. And so it was just this really interesting thing.
I think it's time to do a little rebranding, Lee. I can see I've got a program for you.
But it was just
take
kind
your
of
customer, your it, customer's right. input.
So it was just kind of an interesting dynamic, because then it was a shift in the audience, right?
Right.
Because immediately then they kind of perked up differently and thought, well, wait a minute, this person's not just going to say anything to us. They're going to actually say the authentic thing to us, whether it's comfortable or not. And so that just kind of shifted the audience a little bit. And so it's an interesting thing. But that's also what we have to do with our businesses, mm-hmm. right? Because we hear that back, and it's like anybody that knows me, and the listeners by now know me, I did not get a gene that had diplomacy attached to it. And so it's just those kind of things. You can name your business anything, mm-hmm. but if you don't mind the authenticity of the brand, the authenticity of how you work with your customer, the care that you give, because I hear it over and over from my customers, they work with large law firms, large accounting firms and stuff, and they said, you respond within 24 hours, even if I'm on my deathbed, you know, they're going to get something from me. And it may take weeks to hear back from the larger firms. Yeah, it's like, because I care. I've made that commitment to you. If the email is there at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm up, I'm going to respond to it.
Well, that's the great thing about working with a smaller firm. If you work, if you're a small client of a big firm, you may not get a lot of service. But when you work with somebody like you or I,
right,
you're going to get a response right away. You know that they're thinking about you. They're
and
trying
you get
to solve
the expert,
your problems.
Right? So, yes. Because a lot of times they say, I hired this big firm and some lower level person without experience.
Right. You get
up.
Somebody out of college that's
and then you internship. Get that call and they're like, I say, like, okay, you know, I'll make a call and tell them, okay, that's not the person that was supposed to show up.
Right.
But it is that dynamic. And I think a lot of firms don't take into consideration how much easier it is to keep the customers you get, to retain them, to keep them satisfied.
It's I think it's 60% more profitable to keep the customers you have than to reach out and get new ones. And when you think about it, how much money people spend on acquiring a new client, I think there's
brand,
all kinds
that
of ranges.
Logo,
yeah.
Those advertising, getting them to your
and
website,
just the effort,
getting to click
yeah.
on it, to getting you know, going out and speaking. You spend hundreds of hours getting the right customers
right.
to come in the door, and then you take them for granted when they come in, is what
yeah,
frequently
right.
happens. Because you see yeah. incentives. I'll pick on the telephone company
okay.
and things like
yeah.
that. But you come in, and it's like you see all these great incentives for mm-hmm. somebody coming in. But once you're a customer, you know, every month your bill comes, and every now and then they'll tell you, okay, you've earned the right to change your phone in.
Right.
But otherwise, all you do is see your bill increasing, but you think, well, if I quit this and I went to this other one, you know, and then I came back, right? Because then
yes,
your bill would be lower.
You're wondering about switching costs. I mean, they're paying so much to have you switch each time.
And they're willing to because if they yeah. keep you. But I'm like, well, if you kept me from switching, you wouldn't be doing all this advertising campaign to get somebody else to switch.
Right.
So if
right.
I could get my phone for $45 a month that you're offering to new customers for 2 years, I wouldn't even be looking to switch. And wouldn't that be cheaper for you?
Right.
And, and it's those kind of dynamics that we as small businesses in particular that don't have deep pocketbooks to do lots of things have to think about.
Oh, yeah. Well, building customer loyalty is number one. One thing that I always try to do is think long term. What's mm-hmm. the best for my clients? Maybe the short term might be easy fix, but there's like some things that they really need to do more long term. Then I try to make sure that they're getting that advice.
And then they get there. To pick.
Yeah.
Because it's like you and I both know, we get to give the advice. Here's the low-cost alternative. This
yep.
is what you can do. It's the Band-Aid.
And then
you can put the splint on, or you can have surgery right. and get everything fixed.
And then later on, you're going to have the same problem over again type
right.
thing. So it's a nice. But the other thing is, in the small business world, people seem to talk to each other. It's kind of like you find that people know so-and-so, and somebody knows so-and-so. So having, you know, if you had a reputation like some of these larger companies, like, I don't want to pick on AT&T, but everybody likes to pick on them, but say you're doing something where they have, you know, they have bad customer service, you would not survive. But when, you know, if you're a bigger organization, sometimes I think they can survive a little easier because they do so many different things.
Well, and I think
versus if you're small and people start saying how horrible you are, you know, you're just going to have to
you don't
pack up.
Have the cushion to mm-hmm. absorb the bad reviews.
Right, right.
You don't have, talking about being vocal, I had an issue, and I'll say it, Time Warner Cable. I switched to AT&T because mm-hmm. It was lower cost and a bunch of other things, but also reliability was meant. So I turned on all yeah. of my equipment, and suddenly I get these calls saying, you haven't turned in. I'm like, no, the serial number didn't match. I was like, I don't keep your serial numbers. I don't have any. We can come and search your house. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, that was the wrong thing to say to this Southern girl. And so I went off.
House.
Yeah. So I went off on the guy. And then I turned around and I thought, I've had enough of dealing trying to get to his supervisor. I just tweeted something. Less than 15 minutes later, apparently Time Warner does
monitor
their Twitter.
Their Twitter.
The,
yes.
the issue was resolved. I had a very nice apology and all this stuff. Everything was straightened out. Because, again, they were large enough to understand that that kind of tweet had bigger repercussions.
Right.
And so, it you know, it wasn't just a simple thing of, and it did take more than one tweet. It was like four.
Oh.
Because those 140 characters just were not enough. They realized the ripple effects of a small business telling every other small business that they were connected to in social media that this was the issue.
Right, yes. Then they had somebody monitoring that had the power to go in and try to fix it. And that's really important. And actually, sometimes it's the attitude of people.
Yes.
Not so much as what they can do, but sometimes if people have just a really good attitude about a customer's problem, it goes a long way. It may take a while to fix it. Maybe their internal processes need to be straightened out or whatever. But sometimes that internal, just the being nice versus
right.
I'm
a human. I make a mistake, right? And so I tell my clients, if I make a mistake, I don't charge them to fix it. And 9 times out of 10, they will look at me like I have grown a second head. And I'm like, no, I made a mistake. Why should you pay for something twice? Because it's going to happen. There's going to be something I didn't get all the information, or I overlooked something in exchanging emails or whatever. It's like, I was on site that day, and I said, look, I didn't see that piece of paper. We'll just redo it. You don't have to pay for these past 2 hours. Complete and total shock. And they're like, oh, no, we're going to pay for it. You're working. I was like, no, I made a mistake. And I will have that client for the next 30 years. Because they had never had someone say to them, oh, I made the mistake. You're correct. I'm going to fix it, and it's not going to cost you anything to fix it.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that any company should do when they make mistakes, is acknowledge it and try to make it right. And I've seen this work really effectively, like on Travel Advisor and some of those travel reviews.
Okay.
You know, a hotel will come by, and you can kind of tell sometimes whether they care or not. Some of the hotels, there would be a bad review, and the person will come back, and the first thing they say, we're really sorry you had a bad experience. They don't say, you're wrong or, complain or make excuses. They say, we're sorry you have a bad experience. And then they'll go on to tell about maybe there was a circumstance, maybe there was a storm the day before. I mean, there was something. Why?
Right.
They explain why, and then they apologize again. And then they usually send the person something and say, we would really like you to try our hotel again.
Here's a voucher for 2 days.
And the person might never take them up on it, but the fact that somebody else reads it and goes, wow, these people.
They care.
They really believe in customer service and they care.
And I think the dynamic, again, we're in the real world, the brick and mortar world, and we're online too. And the more that our businesses have to serve both masters, the more we start realizing that it's not just the face-to-face interaction. It's we have to be careful with our words and our emails, with what we're promising on the website and how that's interpreted. That we're dotting our I's and we're crossing our T's and we're making sure that whatever promise implied or actual.
Right.
If someone reads it as an implied promise, then we need to examine that to see if we really were making that promise.
Yes.
Is that how it can be read? And if that's how they read it, let's keep that commitment and make sure we change it so we don't have to do it again or whatever it is. But we have to be realistic in thinking that the majority of our contacts may not be face-to-face.
Oh, definitely.
It's over the phone. It's an email. It's our website. It's a brochure. It's a card. It's word of mouth from someone else. It's social media. And we have to have a conscious decision to manage all those for our brands.
Oh, definitely. And one thing is, don't forget the power of the phone. The phone message should be on target and tailored towards your audience. And actually, it's even better if someone picks up the phone. Each time.
That would be the
ideal.
It's
really, especially with a very small business, like those, single proprietor, fix-it shops, things like that, people who do repairs. And it's really hard for them. But if they have some way that people could get through and they can answer a phone or do some sort of scheduling right away, because when you have something broken, there's an immediate need.
Right.
It's not something that you want to make an appointment for two months from now.
Well, and again, it's using those surveys. It's looking, monitoring social media. I always have Google alerts set up for a number of things. They come in, I have them, I think, once or twice a day, different ones coming in. So that I know in the categories of things that I'm working in, whether that's veterans, it's entrepreneur education, things are coming in, so I'm seeing what's in the news at least. And so I'm able to monitor that and see what trends are there and those kind of things. And then see if I'm on point. And I'm constantly changing my website.
Yeah.
I know, it's never...
So that you can get a little more traffic too.
Well, and it's refining it, because it's like... If somebody went, well, I the other day someone called and said, I didn't find this on your website. Well, it really wasn't anything that would ever be on a website. But I said, okay, I'll take that in consideration. And so then I went out and put in a thing that says, if you were looking for X information, click here, let me know, or call me at. And because it was information that should never be generically on somebody's website. But it was important for them to know that that was one of the things when they came to a website they were hoping to see that was going to help them screen to go to the next step. And so being able to get that information coming through and interacting with that, I still answer every email question that comes in, regardless how old the article was, if it was from 15 years ago. Like 15 I still give them a personal answer to that and say, well, certain things have changed since then, or you can look to this resource or that. And so, you know, I may some months get 30 or 40 emails about overtime. I think I'll get more as the overtime laws change again. But it's important because that's the expectation of being able to reach out and touch.
Right, exactly.
That personal acknowledgement and get answers.
But while you're talking, I was thinking about if you're a business owner and you're already stressed and you're wearing a lot of hats, you're like thinking, oh, how am I going to do all this? Well, there are ways. You know, like you can set up, like you mentioned, you can set up the Google Alerts. You can use different tools
that help Buffer.
Buffer. Schedule your social media. There are ways to do things a little more efficiently so that you can still get on with running your business and focusing on your customers. Or you can bring somebody in.
You can
that
hire
can
people.
Help that, like somebody like Broadreach Marketing Services.
Or Focus Resources.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just, but it's out there that we have to
help
understand
you prioritize.
That as small businesses, what are we good at?
Yeah.
And what are we not good at?
Yeah. And you have an objective for everything that you do. Yeah.
So many of my rocket scientists, and they are literally rocket scientists, will say, this accounting makes no sense to me. And I was like, okay, so. And when we're looking at that for you, accounting is something you need to understand at this level. Mm-hmm. But transactionally, we need you to have the resources to pay someone to actually do it and keep it straight.
Right, exactly.
Same thing with marketing.
With marketing.
With dealing with their social media, with any of those things that are not where your time is best used for your business.
Right. You have to prioritize on what your resources, what you can do.
And one of the things that I think small businesses frequently say, well, is I don't have the money for marketing. Mm-hmm. I don't have money for a new website, you don't have the time or the resources to not have the right website, to not have a marketing plan, to not have social media or something at some point.
You have to think about the opportunity cost of not having customers.
If they can't find you.
If they can't find you, how are you going to have a business?
Right. Or if you take all the time to handyman services, to do home advisors or Angie's List or whatever, you take all that time, you give a discount to get somebody to become your customer. If you don't have a system to keep them as your customer, all you're ever going to have are the first-time customers.
Exactly. Well, we could have a whole another session on referral programs. Yeah, because they're very important in small businesses.
I worked with one small business, and we started analyzing his. He'd had something like 5,000 customers in 2 years, but none of them had ever repeated. And so that was a challenge for him. And so I was going back to him. It's like, why don't you ask them? You have all their emails. You have all this. Ask them why they don't come back. What you're talking about, the survey. Why did you call me, but why didn't you call me the next time you needed somebody?
Right, yeah. So all you got to keep in touch. You got to keep that top-of-mind awareness. Actually, I worked with one gentleman who wanted to change his marketing strategy. He had done a lot of events, a lot of stand-up things, and when he first started his business. But then he wanted to kind of move out of that, kind of move more into something else. And then I said, well, let's do a survey of your customers. It turned out they ranked him very highly. You know, one of the things you can look at is a net promoter score.
Right.
They call it NPS. So if you ever hear anybody talking about NPS, that's what it is. And what it is, it's an exact question that has a standard question that says, how likely are you to refer this business? And his likelihood to refer was like over 9.7.
Wow.
Or not 9.7, I'm sorry, 8.7.
Yeah.
Good. And so that was really good. So, we looked at that and go, okay, why don't we put in more resources into your referral program and things you do to talk to your current customers so that they remember to refer you. So then, the newsletter, and we put in a referral program with a certain rewards when a new customer came in and the way to track it and a special page on his website so that, they could go in and do it automatically and not have to worry about carrying cards around or anything like that. And it's worked out really well for him. And not only that, he doesn't have to stand out in the heat or do these presentations anymore. So he's really happy about that.
Well, and so many small businesses don't think about having their marketing match to their preferences, because there are a wide range of things that we can do. If you're not comfortable public speaking, it's not good to put yourself into the position of always having to depend on public speaking to do that.
Oh.
You could give yourself a heart attack one of those days just from the stress of thinking, I have to get up and do this, and I have to get it right. And is there a return on that versus maybe you want to host something at your business that's an after-hours party or something to get people in? You can do things that you're comfortable with, especially if you're a one-person shop, where that's not your skill set. Yeah. And then it's, let's do the things that are not going to overtax your systems.
Right, yeah.
And that are going to be still effective. I'm not going to ask my clients to write that hate writing.
Right,
but
exactly.
But if they like to do podcasts and talking, then we can do a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think there must be at least 30 different things. I have a free download on my website.
Give them
the
your
seven
website.
Steps for marketing resources. It's www.broadreachmarketingservices.com. Just like all the words together, just no hyphens or anything, just all together. BroadreachMarketingServices.com. And if you go on there, there is a page where you can download the 7 steps to successful marketing. And on there, one of the steps is all the different tools you can use. But, of course, you have to prioritize and put those in a plan.
And you can't do them all.
You cannot do them all.
Just like you can't do what
you don't even want to do them all.
You don't want to. Yeah. But, like, if there's 30 social media things out there. So if we said Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Plaxo, Rise.
Yeah,
I mean, you can name
a And there's things that people don't even think about anymore. Things like postcards. Things about like your local newspaper and talking to somebody like
there's
a reporter
newspaper?
There.
No,
there's still there is for local local business. It depends a lot on your business. You know, if you're B2B versus your B2C, if you're trying to do a local or if you're national like you are national, or a lot of people want to have more of a localized presence, so it's easier for travel and things like that. So then you want to look at what resources will fit there. And, there's a lot of old tools that are still really well. Direct mail actually still works because people don't get very much mail at all. So they get something like, oh, my goodness.
I wish I was one of those people because it's like.
Do you still get a lot of mail?
We still get it. I still get it because there's so many companies. So running multiple companies that comes in for our.
For
2S comes in, for Focus Resources comes in.
But people in corporations, like if you say you're doing B2B, people in businesses don't get that many on there. You as a business owner, you probably get certain things that go out to everybody. But personalized letter, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. And then not those that are supposed to look like they're personalized letters.
Oh,
you
yeah.
get those and the little post
I actually did use the social media to ask about that one time. I asked in one of the groups, would you open a letter? Would be more likely to open a letter if it was hand addressed. And it was interesting what the responses were. Some people thought that they would, but then they said if it's not personalized inside, they'd be very disappointed and probably throw it out. And then other people said it didn't matter because they figure it was just
it was a gimmick
either
anyway.
way, you know, either way. They were going to either open it or not. It didn't matter what it had on it. And then the main point that I got out of that of asking all those people was just that you really should match. So if you're going to personalize the outside, personalize the inside. You know, it should have a little note on it, and it should like have information just for them.
I won't name the person that's in the area. I went to a sales. I think he's supposed to be a very internationally known sales expert's workshop.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to look for new things, and I thought, well, he was talking about how effective this technique was, and I didn't stay for the entire workshop after he shared the technique because it was a lie, right? Mm. So for me, in my integrity, I'm not going to start my sales process with
right.
that. And so he said, well, you do X, Y, and Z, and then you call this person, and then say, well, then just have them transfer the call to somebody else, and so they think it'll be a recommendation from that office. So he went through this long process, and I'm sitting there, and everybody's kind of looking at me, because if anything anybody knows, it's like I'm kind of black and white in my roles. And everybody's like, why did you leave? And I was like, because a sales technique that starts with a lie is not something you want associated with your business. It may work the first time. But if the CEO of the company ever talks to the purchasing agent and mentions that in the purchasing, hey, I did business with the guy you referred, and he's like, I didn't refer that guy. That's going to do more damage than that one sale you might have gotten.
Oh, definitely. You should never. I mean, and the way it's really bad for business to start off on a lie. There's many good ways to market. You really don't need to stoop to that.
Right. And so when we're a small business, sometimes the pressure to get that next sale. That pressure to get the next sale. But getting that next sale at the expense of every sale afterwards is worse for your business. So if we consciously make a decision, this is the name of our company, this is our tagline, this is our brand, this is what our customers are saying with us, this is what makes them satisfied, this is what gives them the heartache, this is how I can reach them through social media, or I stay in touch this way, I have this newsletter. It's bringing that together in a strategic plan and a tactical plan that's going to make a difference whether your business is going to exist for 2 or 3 years or 15 years.
Right, yeah.
So how do you work with your customer, sitting down with that small business that says, you know, I don't have much money, Nancy. We all say that. And it's true, regardless of the size of the business.
Yeah, it is.
But I want to start somewhere. So if I called Broadreach Marketing today and I told you I've been in business for a few years, how do I start making a bigger impact with my business? I need more customers. I need to turn on more sales. I need all of these things. Where do I start with you?
One of the first things I do is always sit down and listen to them talk about their business so I can kind of understand what their challenges are and what their distinctive competencies are. Because you want to build on what they've already done. You don't want it to go off in a whole different direction unless there's a new product or they want to do a new business. But most of the time you want to build on the reputation and the strengths of that they've already established and spend so much time working on that. And then really listen to what their objectives are. Mm-hmm. You really have to know, do they want to grow? Do they want to just maintain? Do they want to package up their business because they're going to retire soon? Or, you know, what is really the motivation behind it? But then there's a whole series of exercises. There's actually a seven-step plan that I can walk them through. And one thing that I find when we were talking before about understanding, like, your message is going through a persona exercise where you actually define your ideal customers.
And some people refer to that as getting your customer avatar.
Like an avatar.
So somebody sitting across from you, what do they look like? Yes, what are they wanting?
Yeah. And there's actually, I have actually worksheets, though, to kind of help guide them, you know, and ask all the questions and kind of, what would this sound like? And then you can kind of develop your tone and see if that matches what you're doing now, because maybe there's gaps in analysis. And then the other thing, if they were wanting to rejuvenate a business, talk to the customers and find out where the extra needs are. You know, maybe there's needs that the customers would really like to buy from this customer, from this particular business. You know, they've been a long-time customer, but I wish they sold this, you know, or I wish they sold that, or maybe if they didn't do that, you know, and try to get an idea. Right. There might be opportunities that they're totally not realizing that they could get into. So that's just a few of the things, but it would really depend on the business.
And then you come up with a custom plan for them. You don't say every person has to do this type of social media.
Oh, absolutely not.
Every person's website has to be rebuilt or whatever.
Anytime you see one of those one-size-fits-all things, you know that there's something not right with it, because not everybody's business is a little bit different.
I call it the find-and-replace consultant that has the same template. It just goes in and changes the name of the client and hands them the same plan.
Yes, right?
It's just like you get a Word document.
Find and replace. Yeah, that's good.
Because you go in, and that's literally what they do. They come in, they do an analysis, and the same solution is given to every customer because that's what they're selling. They go into a Word document and do find and replace, and sometimes they miss some things that replacing.
Yeah. No, that would not work. That would not work because not everybody has the same strengths and capabilities, and every business is different, and all their customers, their ideal customers are all different.
So. Well, and the thing I think the small business needs to realize is that while you can pay for a $500 thing that's the thing everybody gets, or you might have to spend $5,000, but if it's a program that fits your business, that acknowledges your customers, that gets you to understand more of that, then you're going to be better off in that $5,000 multiplying than the $500 that made no change.
Right, yeah, because it's amortized over time. You got to think of how long is this going to affect your marketing and your business.
So when you're in there and you're working with them, I frequently get calls from the marketing firms, and I think we've talked about this before, you and I, that they'll turn on the business for the customer and suddenly the customer starts imploding because they didn't have the systems and the operations to actually handle the amount of business they start pulling in. So how do you work with them on that? How do you prepare them for that? Do you help them evaluate that during the marketing process as to what their current capacity is if they turn on all these new customers and things like that?
That is really a happy problem to have.
It is,
you know,
until the business takes.
There's actually a lot of marketing that you can scale.
Right.
Like, for example, if you're using Google AdWords, you can turn that off at any time. So if you find that your website's falling over and it's about ready to crash because you have so many hits, that's time to scale back because you're wasting money. You're spending too much money, more than you can handle. So you would have to manage. Actually, that's one thing that brings me into this, testing. Testing is something that people kind of forget about in their haste to want to get ready and go and stuff. Right. But you should always be looking at testing and measuring whenever you can. Whenever you're doing something new, it's something different, especially if it's a big project, say a big initiative with a new product, you should try rolling it out to a smaller audience first to get an idea of how it's going to react. So you avoid that. So you avoid that. You know, like if it's imploding from the small thing, then you know, man, we don't run and roll it out till we have our systems in place and we can scale.
Yeah, I remember getting that SOS call. I guess it's probably been about 6 or 7 years ago from one of the marketing firms. That said, can you help this client? I was like, what's the problem? I said, we turned on the marketing. They wanted to go to be a $7 million business. They were about a 3. They're down to a 1 because not only couldn't they serve the new customers, they couldn't serve the existing customer base. And because they had just turned everything on without thinking. How do we ramp out? How do we train? How do we maintain quality? How do we do the production? Yeah. How do we do all of those things? And so when we're plugging in marketing, we really have to bring in
the whole
business type of thing. And that's what I'm always telling everybody. And it's always great to have you as a resource for clients because it's you're coming in, and when we put a complete strategic plan together, it's the website. It's this and it's that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and I'll admit it, the last round with my website, I went with a large firm thinking they would have it together. And I was like, one of the worst mistakes.
And so
it's like I've learned to build websites now. So I'm in there tweaking my website, doing that testing, making changes, doing things. And that's taken it to another level of services with clients now, too, because it's really realizing how important how a little thing on the website or how delaying something on your website delays the entire messaging, delays launching. Yeah. If something goes wrong and the registrations don't work or your newsletter doesn't go out, it's making
user
sure
experience people are very, very important. I think that's going to be the job of the future. For if somebody was looking for a job where they wanted to make sure that they're always going to be employed, I think a user experience would be something to go into.
And kind of like a secret shopper for
secret shopper on a website. Like, and this is done a lot, especially with like large websites. They have people that just go through and test everything to make sure it works the way it's supposed to, because sometimes you fill in one form and it should automatically go to the next form, but it doesn't because no one thought about that the consumer
thing on my last website. They had to rebuild it a couple times, and because they kept the website people kept breaking things, and then I would go in and I would test every link, and I'm like, okay, do not tell me this is ready to go when none of these links are going where they're supposed to go. And they're like, well, we can fix it after it's live. And it's like, no, you can't fix it after it's live. And I don't know how many times I hear that from website companies that something can be fixed after. I was like, no, we get one chance when somebody hits a website. If it's not working, then they're not going to tell us it's not going to work. They're going to go somewhere else where it is working.
Just like get disgusted and leave. Yeah. And you know, back to like just talking to business owners, it's nice to put things kind of graphically. I like to draw it out on a chart where I have two axes, and one is how much effort you want to put in on something and what you think you're going to get out of it. And it could be the same thing for their products. Maybe they have 4 different products that they sell, and some are harder to sell. You know, what are their margins, and see where those fit. Because maybe they should be selling, obviously they should be selling a high margin product, but if it takes too much effort, maybe the other ones are better.
So we have
all
like,
kinds of things.
Believe it or not, we just have a few minutes.
Oh my
left.
Gosh, we're, this
we've
gone
flown
so fast.
Through this. Yeah. And you're going to have to come back and do part 2, because I know we didn't get through everything today. But what are the 2 things or 3 things that you can think of that right now that a small business could start thinking about in starting a new marketing campaign and evaluating whether they want to bring in someone else or they want to try some stuff on their own and that trade-off?
Oh, that's right off. Well, I think they should think about, first of all, who their customer they're trying to reach is. Like, just really think, okay, what ideal customer do I want to reach? And then second, think of, okay, do we have expertise in-house to really reach those customers? Do we have ideas already that we want to do? And do we have time to do it? And then the third one is my phone number. No.
You can give them the phone number.
919-610-0334. And then, you know, you can talk to somebody. You know, I give free consultations. They're a half hour and you can get a sense of whether you might want to have somebody. Or, you know, maybe you want to do it yourself and you're happy with that.
Well, and I say there's also that mix. Yeah. That we give plans. I know, I'm sure you do too. But in the business, it's like, here's the stuff. I can do it all for you.
Right.
Here's the price. Here's the price if you want some guidance, you know, a few hours, every now and then you want to check in. Or there's something in the middle that I give you structure, we check in weekly or biweekly, and still make sure you're tracking on the process or the phone a friend. Mm-hmm. You got to a point, you thought you understood it, now you need help with the testing or you need help with a survey or you need something that, while you can do most of it yourself, you can a la carte the service.
Right, I kind of do the boat analogy. I could sit in the front of the boat and just kind of tell them which way to go. You know, tell them which way the wind's blowing, kind of being a coach.
Right.
Or I could be on the side holding one of the sails and kind of help implement. Or I could kind of just, you know, take over and make them a strategic plan and actually hold a rudder for a while. So, I mean, I can do whatever they need at the time, whatever they feel comfortable.
So I'm going to say everyone should visit the website, broadreachmarketingservices.com, to look at the seven
steps to marketing success.
And Nancy, I want to thank you for being on the show today. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things.
Thank you, Lee.